Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, looks like you're feeling better.
Dude, I'm back.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Thank
you.
I have a sound effect for you, dude.
You do? Okay.
I pulled this just for you.
I miss you, man.
Aw, dude.
Gotta pull the Gary Delabate.
I wish I could say I feel the same way.
Yeah, well, you know, one-sided is better than no-sided.
It's good to see that you're feeling better. You certainly probably feel a lot better than the Pittsburgh Penguins do right now.
Oh, my God.
Dude, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
And we haven't actually talked that much this week. This playoff so far
has been
pretty topsy-turvy.
Insane.
Like, really entering the world of slightly bizarro.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Dude, I love the new sound effects. You got another one, dude?
Whoa. Stop the clock.
Got that one.
There's so much stuff. This actually, I don't know. I don't really remember the postseason being this violent. Actually, there's a lot of fighting going on, especially in the Sharks game, game two on Saturday night.
I don't know if everybody is aware of all the penalties that were laid out at the 20-minute mark.
Would you like to do a dramatic
game two? But I was just going over them. Douglas Murray, 5-minute major for fighting. Douglas Murray, 10-minute misconduct. Justin Braun, 10-minute misconduct. Douglas Murray, 2 minutes for roughing. Winnick, 2 minutes for roughing. Roman Polak, 5 minutes for fighting. Crombean, 2 minutes for cross-checking. Sobotka, 10-minute misconduct. Sobotka, 5 for fighting. Braun, 5 for fighting. Dominic Moore, 5 for fighting. Langenbrunner, 2 minutes for roughing. Polak, 10-minute misconduct. Barrick Jackman, 5 minutes for fighting. And Barrick Jackman, 10-minute misconduct. That's all at the 20-minute mark.
What about Sobotka, 10 minutes for being a douche?
Douche.
for punching Dominic Moore. I mean, the camera didn't quite catch the whole thing, but very clearly it seems like Dominic Moore was maybe not wanting to go.
Yeah.
The full Monty in terms of the fight, and Sobotka apparently just punched him in the face.
I don't know. Did you see the beginning of game two of the Rangers series?
Yes, the Karkner play?
Yeah. Karkner just came up to Brian Boyle because Brian Boyle, I guess, put a lick on... Who'd Brian Boyle put a lick on? Oh,
I think he hit Carlson, right?
That's right. That's right. Eric Carlson, he hit him in game one, who is, you know, the young standout defenseman for the Senators. And so 2 minutes into the game, Karkner comes up to Brian Boyle and he just takes his glove off and he just starts punching him in the face.
Right.
And Brian Boyle just stands there and takes it like a man. He just sits there and gets pummeled.
He took it and then basically he's being assaulted and Dubinsky comes in to be stop. And Dubinsky got thrown out of the game.
Right, for a third man. Even though Brian Boyle didn't take his gloves off and he wasn't fighting back. It wasn't even a fight.
It's terrible.
And Dubinsky completely lost it after he figured that out.
He threw the Gatorade jug and I think he punched a cab driver, went on the subway and used a screwdriver and assaulted every violent act in New York City history.
But dude, let's go back to Sharks and then we'll try to
There's widen. so much to talk about. We'll go back to game one.
Game one.
Sharks win in double overtime.
Right. Martin Havlat, the hero.
Yeah. Havlat, 2 goals in that game. Hero in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
The drama over the Logan Couture pick, dude. What do you make of that?
It's playoffs. I don't care. There's so much stuff.
How many times does that happen during the game where it goes uncalled? We've seen the Sharks be the victim of that. Did Logan Couture pick him? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you see
happens.
That all the time.
Guess what? Go through the pick then. Go through the pick. Don't just stand there.
Yeah. It happens all the time. You see guys place themselves very judiciously in another player's path in order for a player to be have a little bit more trouble getting somewhere. It happens. In the most egregious cases, it's a call. In this case, I could have gone either way on it, but there were certainly other calls in the game that went unmarked, and this wasn't particularly any better or worse than any of the other ones. So the fact that people want to make a big deal out of it, obviously it was a scoring play for the Sharks, and so that's why it gets all this attention. But
for sure.
But the fact is that you know, these kinds of things happen in the playoffs. You see lots of crazy stuff. But game one, certainly there were a lot of tense moments in the first overtime, because it seems like the Sharks did get completely dominated.
Right.
And Niemi just saved their bacon time and time again. And Havlat comes the hero. And then in game two, most of that momentum goes out the window in what, the first 2 minutes of the game?
It wasn't even. I think it was within the first 2 minutes that Mark Edward Vlasic continues the Sharks' horrible playoff karma in terms right. of scoring own goals. And dude, I think this one was worse than the Boyle one.
Oh, yeah. It was
this
worse
was
than the Boyle one.
Worse. A really terrible decision to try and backhand flip it instead of just cupping it and scooting it
right.
towards him. Why do you think he tried to make that play, dude?
Well, you see this happen a dozen times a year, where a puck trickles through the goaltender doesn't make a clean save, it trickles behind him, the defensive there, and they just swat it away. And 99 times out of 100, we wouldn't even think, give it a second thought. And it's the first touch. Usually, just generally, it's not a good idea to just sort of play around with the puck in the paint, you know? There's a lot of speed in the NHL. You get one guy who nudges Vlasic and then it goes off his stick or whatever. So I think he made the right play. It just, 99 times out of 100, that's going to go exactly the way he expected, which is it's going to go out of the crease behind Niemi. And this time it didn't. He just sort of messed up. It went a little bit off the toe of the stick and into the net. And like you said, the Sharks are snake bit again with bad playoff karma. And it is worse than Boyle's, because Boyle's at least went off another player's stick. This went right. directly off of Vlasic into the goal.
This one seems so deep, too. I just thought it was really ill-advised. He seemed really close to the net, where Boyle was, you know, all the way on the outside yeah. near the boards and was playing it behind the net. And I don't know, it was almost like he intentionally put it in there. It was a great scoring chance by Vlasic. The best scoring chance of the night by the Sharks.
Well, really the only other move he could have tried to tuck it under Niemi. That's really his only other move. Because if he tried to go the other way, he was not really in a position to wheel around and throw it out of the crease in the other direction. His body wasn't in the right spot. That would have taken extra time. And like I said, you don't want to take any more time than absolutely necessary to get the puck out of your own crease. It's just a fluke. It's a fluky play. And it didn't go the Sharks' way. You know, I think maybe people didn't make enough of the fact that was a 65-foot shot that got through Niemi. And if Vlasic wasn't there, it would have gone straight into the net on its own.
Right.
I don't really understand why Niemi didn't have that cleanly.
This is the Bill Buckner argument here.
A little bit.
No, everyone forgets about the wild pitch before the ball went through Buckner's legs.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, no, you're right. So all is forgotten, certainly, because the Sharks do come away with what was really the most realistic best-case scenario, which is get one in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They
right.
got one.
Right.
And you know, you erase what happens beyond that. The Sharks have tilted home ice back towards themselves. And, you know, with five games left, three of them will be at the tank if it goes the full seven. And now we're looking into game three. Now, with all the shenanigans at the end of the game, and I'll tell you what, after seeing them kind of let the fights go at the end, like where Braun got kind of worked and...
Oh, he got more than just a little
and,
worked.
And
Pollock
Dominic Moore
wailed on
just...
him.
Got worked, but Dan Boyle was beating the crap out of who was he fighting?
Oh, he was fighting they didn't even show it. Was it it wasn't
God.
Scott Nickel. Who
no.
was it?
He had see. Somebody in a really bad spot.
Alex Steen. It was
yeah.
Steen, wasn't it?
He had Alex Steen and he was about to go Roman Pollock on him.
Yeah.
And they stopped it. I was like, come on.
Well, I'm glad they stopped the Pollock thing, because otherwise Justin Braun would have been like a fine
yeah.
red mist
yeah. that was,
in St. Louis right now.
That was not good. Lots of around the NHL in this playoffs, there have been a lot of questionable. There's been one suspension so far. Byron Bitts, who cares,
yeah.
in Vancouver. Brent Burns' elbow to the face of Scott Nickel. Dude, you just count it as a, you know, Scott Nickel. It's sort of like Gulliver's Travels where, you know, you're amongst the Lilliputians and you accidentally hit him in the elbow with your giant, hit him in the face with your giant elbow, or the more realistic, pretty intentional. Do you think Burns is in trouble here, maybe?
I think he might be in trouble. That looked pretty intentional to me. That was not a good play.
I guess I saw that three guys had hearings today, and no one from the Sharks and Blues was on that list. And that doesn't mean that they won't be on the list tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Karkner was on that list. Hagelin was on that list. And Andrew Shaw was on that list for hitting Mike Smith.
I saw that
in the game last night against Phoenix. So what do the Sharks have to do going forward, and what do you kind of take from these first two games, dude? How are you feeling right now?
Well, I'm certainly not happy about game two. It certainly took a little bit of the happiness away from the overtime win in game one. It made the overtime win in game one seem more like a fluke than I'd like to admit. The Blues dominated that game most of the time. And the Sharks didn't have too many scoring chances. They looked actually pretty decent on the penalty kill. I thought the Sharks' penalty kill actually looked okay. They looked absolutely terrible on the power play. Special teams, you know, the Blues scored once on their power play, 1-for-6. So, you know, it could have been worse. We've seen the Sharks' penalty kill look a lot worse than that over the past few games. But the fact of the matter is that the Sharks are definitely not looking good on special teams. And the Sharks don't really have a solution for the Blues 5-on-5 at this point. It's funny because the Sharks have been pretty bad 4-on-4, and yet I think the Sharks 4-on-4 has looked pretty good the few minutes it's actually been out there.
Yep.
Mostly because of Martin Havlat, frankly. And because Martin Havlat is clearly the best 1-on-1 player the Sharks have, and he is willing to take that puck 1-on-1 against people, whereas no one else really is on the Sharks right now. So I'm certainly worried. I was a little surprised to see so many changes in the lineup. We saw Kent Huskins get knocked out. I was certainly a little surprised to see Chris Stewart get scratched. Chris Stewart's a pretty good player. Obviously, he hasn't really caught on real well in St. Louis so far. And so they put in BJ Crombie and Matt D'Agostini instead of Chris Stewart and Ryan Reeves, which seemed to have worked out. None of those guys got really any points or anything like that. But
Crombie actually took two minor penalties, right?
Right.
I think he got one of those at the end of the game, but he did take one. And Koliakovo was in for Huskins, and he took a penalty during the game as well. But the changes, the buttons that Hitchcock pushed worked. Them losing Halak, I thought in the moment that could end up being a good thing. You know, when you have a goalie who's, you know, by all accounts, a little beat up, and Brian Elliott coming in, but he was really damn good.
Right.
I mean,
he's been
so
great all
good
year,
and seemed even more solid than Halak. So that's not that encouraging. I also thought maybe during the whole broken bench business, when the Blues were really dominating and then they had to stop the game, I thought, okay, well, this is going to work in our favor. We'll get some momentum back because now we've had like this 10-minute stoppage.
Right.
And they're a little distracted and kind of laughing over on the bench. Like maybe we'll be able to get them. No, nothing happened. What's concerning to me and what we talked about at the beginning of the series is that the Sharks can't win this series without production from Marleau and Couture. And so far, we've got nothing.
Right.
You know, we've got nothing on the scoreboard.
And not only have we got nothing, they haven't looked very good, in my opinion. Especially, I don't think, I have not noticed Logan Couture very much at all, and I haven't noticed Patrick Marleau much. Joe Thornton is fighting, he's fighting the good fight out there.
Yeah.
I've noticed Thornton many, many times.
Yeah, Thornton, Pavelski, definitely heavily involved.
Havlat.
You notice those guys. Yeah, Couture and, Couture had some moments last night, I thought. You know, the one who's definitely the most invisible is still Patrick Marleau. And you hate to sound like a broken record about it, but he's got to show up here.
Yeah.
Now, he did actually hit somebody, and he threw a punch at someone last night, and the guy's reaction on his face was like, what?
You know? Wait a minute.
It was like Gandhi threw a punch or something.
I know, yeah.
You couldn't even believe the guy's face was so shocked that Patrick Marleau threw a punch, which I think, unfortunately, speaks volumes about what his reputation is around the league.
Right.
That you could push this guy around, he's not going to stick up for himself.
Right.
But, you know, a little pissiness from Marlow last night. What do the Sharks have to do tomorrow night, dude, to come away with a 2-1 advantage? It is, I think, pretty critical at this point.
Right. Well, so the first goal was a fluke. The second goal was a great individual effort by TJ Oshie. And the third goal was basically when the Sharks were trying to score late in the game and they couldn't make it happen. So to me, there's one thing you do is you try and keep that first line out of it the way that they did in game number one with Backes and Oshie and David Perron not doing anything. And on the flip side, you try and find a way to activate Couture and Marlow and make them more effective. Because right now, it's not exactly been a clash of the Titans here in terms of just a massive shootout between the top lines. But right now, the Blues are winning that battle a little bit. And if we can turn the tide over to the other side, I mean, I think, frankly, I thought the Desjardins line was better than the second line for a good part of the game. Mm-hmm.
Those lines have been good. I enjoy the effort from TJ Gagliardi in both these games, but the guy just cannot. You're seeing now right. Where maybe that frustration in Colorado is setting in. He cannot finish. Like, he cannot finish around the net. He whiffs, he fans, he bobbles, but he's there. You know,
right.
He's in and around the mix, and he is kind of a pain in the ass. You just hope that he can kind of start to put it together. Now, dude, as we look ahead, and there's been no confirmation of this from any Sharks source, although we do know Dominic Moore has a broken nose, if we're assuming that he's at least going to be out Monday, you know, I mean, these guys can play with cages and mm-hmm. but you got to think maybe they won't go that route. Who are you going to pick from the Sharks forwards that have been scratched? Are you going to go with Ferriero? Are you going to put Vandermeer up there? Are you going to go Hanzus? Are you going to go Brad Winchester?
I go Brad Winchester.
Yeah, that's what I wanted you to say.
There's no doubt.
I knew you were going to say
There's no doubt I go Brad Winchester.
I agree. Now, Brad Winchester hasn't played a game in maybe a month, dude.
I don't care.
So it doesn't matter?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you get him out there. I think that is the right move, and I hope that they go for it. And let him wreak some havoc, dude. He doesn't have to take penalties, and I would be super clear with him about that.
Right.
We're not looking for the Ben Eager meltdown mode
right.
that we saw last year that really worked against us. You know, Sharks are down 7-1 or whatever, and he scores and celebrates like he just won the championship belt.
That still was great. I still love that for some reason. I just thought that was such a douchey
so
move.
It was so
great.
Stupid, dude. So stupid.
Douche.
Oh man, I love that.
Oh man, but
in some perverse way, I loved it.
I would go Brad Winchester. I would do it, and I certainly would not go Michael Hanzus. I think that
would be a mistake.
The absolute wrong person to go with in this case. So we'll have to see what happens. I mean, I guess it wouldn't be shocking if Dominic Moore was in there tomorrow, wearing a mask, playing with a broken nose. But you might want to give the guy a night to let his headache subside. I'm sure that, you know, that doesn't feel good. I've never broken my nose, but
it's not fun.
No, doesn't feel good, dude. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow night for sure.
Yeah.
I think
the Sharks really sort of need to turn the tide here. And in both games, I thought the Sharks really got sort of, the Blues stuck it to them a little bit here in the first part of both games.
Yeah.
And I think we're definitely going to be looking to see the Sharks have a good start at home
tomorrow
night.
There were moments in game one where I think that I thought that game was a little more even
mm-hmm.
and that they were able to impose their will on St. Louis. And, you know, you want to put pressure on the team that's the favorite, and that is St. Louis. So take game three. And, you know, I said Sharks in six. I think you said Sharks at 7, right?
Yeah, that's what I said.
If the Sharks are going to win this series, it's going to go long. And the thing is, if the Sharks win this series, you know, it's lining up right now to be a basic free-for-all around the NHL, dude, with all the other series.
Yeah, so let's switch to those because there's so much to talk about in the other series. The one thing that's just absolutely shocking right now is my pick to leave the East and go to the Stanley Cup Finals is now down 3-0.
Right.
Mine too. The Pittsburgh Penguins down 3-0 to the Philadelphia Flyers. They won 8-4 today, and the Flyers just are scoring in bunches right now. You cannot keep them off the scoreboard. Claude Giroux is playing awesome. Danny Briere is doing everything that you could ask of him. My favorite non-shark in the NHL, Scott Hartnell, is playing well. I can't quite understand how exactly the Flyers are winning, but they're winning, and they're winning decisively.
Well, the games are really bizarre to watch. They're so back and forth. There's no defense being played.
Right.
Almost because neither side like is able to stop the other. I mean, the Penguins are losing, but they're losing scoring four goals. I mean, they're scoring pretty prolifically as well. They just can't stop anybody, and they look like, I mean, I know there's the new Three Stooges movie out right now, and that's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah.
On the blue line now, I didn't watch the whole game today, but I watched part of it. And I think the Penguins lost Chris Letang today too, which, you know,
that's not good.
No, dude.
But he hasn't been that great defensively,
I
frankly.
I tell you what, it's like watching the three games, it's over. Like the Penguins, there's no comeback coming. Like,
yeah.
It's not going to happen for them, and they look completely out of it.
Like, I know.
They just look completely out of it. It's very, very bizarre to see.
I honestly can't explain it. No. The third pairing for, I have to admit though, the third pairing for the Pens is just bad. It's Englund and Lovejoy. Ugh, gosh. And
well, Niskanen's been hurt, which has hurt them.
Right, that really hurt them. Wait, Niskanen's on the
Penguins.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Grossman, another ex-Dallas star who's on the Flyers.
So you're saying the Flyers third pairing is bad too?
No, it's actually better, but Lovejoy and Englund has not been good. And there was one time in particular I remember distinctly in game two where I look at, and it was after an icing call, and it was Jager and Giroux and who's the third on that line. I can't remember. It's either Briere or Hartnell. And it was against Lovejoy and Englund. And I'm like,
it's over.
Uh-oh. And they scored like 10 seconds later. It's just, those guys just got worked. And so there's such a crazy mismatch of players. Like, it seems like if you can exploit the matchup, then you're going to score. And that's sort of what the Flyers are doing.
It's insane. I don't know. It's bizarre. I've never seen three playoff games in a row that have been so wide open, like back to the Gretzky days in the 80s, where there's just, you know, games were like 11-8 or whatever.
Yeah.
This was what it was like. And you wonder if seeding plays out like you would assume, and Philly plays Boston, like, are they going to be able to do this against Boston? Do you think Boston would allow this kind of free-for-all tempo?
I don't think so.
You think not, but how can Pittsburgh... I mean, Bilesma's looking pretty bad right now. Like, how do you not get control back of these games? And Pittsburgh has completely blown it twice. I mean, they had 3-0 lead in that first game. They blew it. Mm-hmm. They had leads in the second
game.
They had
a third period lead in game two.
Oh, boy. So, anyways, that was my big team in my side of the playoff pool, dude. I'm quaking in my boots right now.
Right.
I am quaking in my boots. I am afraid of you. I am afraid.
Well, I have Philly.
I don't want to pay for your coach ticket, dude, to Vegas. Let's look at
some of the other series.
Another series. How about Rangers, Ottawa, very violent series in game two last night. Ottawa took one at the Garden. Mm-hmm. So it's 1-1 going back to Ottawa. Have you watched really any of the series?
I watched a little bit of game two. I watched the up to the Karkner thing, and then I watched a little bit more of that period, and I think some of period two. I wouldn't be that afraid of the Rangers if I was another team in the East right now. They didn't look great. Lundqvist looks great. He always looks great. But, their scoring is... Like, Gaborik is just not... Gaborik used to be... Whenever he touches the puck, you're like, uh-oh. Back when he was, in his heyday in the Wild. And that's kind of gone. Like, mm-hmm. You don't really see Gaborik do that anymore. And maybe it was different because I was watching a lot where they didn't have Dubinsky, and Dubinsky's kind of an important piece. But I wouldn't be that scared of the Rangers right now if I was another team. And I still don't think I was going to win the series, but... It doesn't appear to be super dangerous. I mean, the dangerous team right now looks to be the Flyers and Boston, because Boston seems... Well, I mean, the Capitals managed to tie the series. sort of against all odds. But you know, Boston seems to have the ultimate trump card in Zdeno Chara. It's just,
yeah.
I mean, if Boston plays Philly, then you're going to see Chara out there against Briere every single shift, and you want, or out there against Giroux every single shift, and you wonder if that can neutralize Giroux. If anything can neutralize Giroux, it's going to be the guy who's 6'9", 260.
Right. Right. Yeah. Boston's got to get by the Caps first. I mean, that series also tied 1-1, and both those games have gone overtime also.
Right.
And Braden Holtby's been really damn good.
He's been real good.
So, I don't know. I mean, Boston, you've got to figure they're going to win. I still think the Rangers are going to, you know, turn it on and get past Ottawa pretty quickly. I don't think they're going to let this go on much longer. That team and how they're made up, I mean, they're missing the Chara, which is the important element, but everything else about them reminds me about Boston team last year. And with the elite goalie, maybe the best in the NHL, plus just really hard overall team effort night after night, I still feel pretty confident that the Rangers will make it at least to the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, Boston, Philly, if that's how this is going to play out, that's another, you know, must-watch series.
Yeah, yeah. I'll watch that for
sure. But Boston's got a little ways to go. The series that we're not talking about because nobody cares is the Devils and Panthers, dude.
Yeah, well, they won like 3-0. It wasn't even close.
It was 3-2.
It was
3-2. They made it 3-2, but still, you know, that would be probably the most shocking outcome.
Yeah,
left is that if the Devils didn't advance past Florida, and you know, probably play the Rangers, but that series I didn't watch a minute of that.
Me
mainly because I don't get the NHL Network. Thank you, UVerse.
Yeah,
you bastards. All right.
Well, the other shock is one we've buried a little bit is that LA's up 2-0 on Vancouver, yeah. Which is awesome for me because. Well, you have Vancouver.
I have Vancouver and I have LA.
Oh, you have LA. So
it's kind of still bad news for me.
It's still bad for you,
me. But not bad news. I mean, more importantly, over our playoff pool is not bad news for the Sharks.
No.
I mean, like, not bad news at all. Like, if you can somehow find a way to get past St. Louis and you're looking at a landscape of Phoenix, Detroit or Nashville and LA.
Right.
Like the Sharks Stanley Cup radar just went up by 10. You're just like, oh my God.
Right.
Like this might happen.
This could happen.
Could happen.
Right.
And St. Louis could be your toughest, you know, team on the way there. That's why I mean I'm openly rooting for the Red Wings for the first time in my life. You know, I really would like to see them get past Nashville, though they're down 2-1 to them. That series has been pretty entertaining. But we'll go back to the Canucks LA dude. How surprised are you on a scale of 1 to 10 surprise?
I'm an 8 right now. I know, and you talked about maybe the best goalie in the NHL. That might very well be Jonathan Quick, and he's gained a lot of sort of grassroots momentum for Vezina voting here in the last 2 weeks. A lot of people are really promoting this guy as, you know, LA scored the least number of goals of any team in the NHL, not any team in the playoffs, any team in the NHL. They didn't score. And the reason they're in the playoffs is, frankly, because of goaltending. And Jonathan Quick is the goaltender. So Jonathan Quick, he's still their number one star, as far as I'm concerned. And he's the one who's been stymieing Vancouver. I know that Daniel has not played yet.
And he's not going to play this series.
Right. So, you know, you see him skating, and he's skating at about 1 mph all by himself. And I think they put bubble wrap on all the boards. He's not close to coming back. Right. I thought he was. For some reason, I thought before game one, he was skating contact, but he wasn't.
I think in that bizarre world of gamesmanship, for some reason, they want you to think he's coming back. I don't, to maybe waste their time game planning for him, I guess, but clearly not healthy enough. Dude, I'm still sticking by Vancouver in this series. I think the Kings will fumble and bumble this way, just based on how they fumble and bumbled away leads against the Sharks in the last two games of the series. We saw them start well and not be able to finish. And I think we're going to see it starting tonight. I think Vancouver switching to Corey Schneider. I think that's going to be the light on in the Vancouver locker room. And they're going to get this series back at 2-2, leaving LA. I don't buy the Kings as
a second round playoff team yet.
Yeah.
I just don't.
And Kessler is practicing his diving. He's really working on that. Did you see that dive against Mike Richards?
No.
I mean, that is embarrassing. That is embarrassing. The guy is a professional hockey player.
Right.
He gets caught up with Richards. They sort of hack each other a little bit going through. They tie up a hair, sort of coming back towards the puck at the blue line. And Kessler just throws himself on the ice, straightens both legs, and sticks his feet out up in the air like a cartoon character. I mean, that is embarrassing. That is a humiliating thing to do. I mean, the guy is just... I don't understand the mindset of someone who would do that. I mean, this guy is supposed to be one of the best American-born players in the NHL, and he stoops to that level. Mike Richards really got under his skin. I mean, give Richards all the credit in the world, but the fact that he didn't get a diving call is just another one of the many head-scratching calls or non-calls we've seen from the various officiating teams this postseason.
Too much thought about body waxing and nude photo shoots, yeah. Perhaps.
But, I mean, I have to admit, I really like Ryan Kessler, but I lost a significant amount of respect for him when I saw him do that. In the playoffs, no less.
Yeah. Lame.
You're losing, and you pull that. I mean, that is just weak sauce.
NTG, not too good.
Chicago and Phoenix, you know, actually surprisingly entertaining hockey.
Yeah.
I was really surprised. I've seen, I saw good pieces of both games. Those games were entertaining to watch, and I was really expecting sort of the Blues, the Dave Tippett grind and bash, but there's been some good skill. It's, you know, partially it's just hard to contain Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa. Duncan Keith has not looked great. Seabrook seems to be, he's sort of taken the limelight a little bit on that first pair for Chicago. A couple times, Duncan Keith got sort of tooled by some guys, which really surprised me. So, you know, that was one thing that I've been sort of looking at. The other thing that I go back to that I've really been watching, mainly because that was something that Jay Woodcroft talked about when I did the fantasy thing, is that Mike Smith is the best puck handling goaltender in the NHL. You see him make these 65-foot saucer passes to guys standing in the center dot. It's pretty amazing how good of a puck handler Mike Smith is. So it's good hockey. I mean, if there's another series I might watch, if I can only pick one other Western series to watch, I might watch that series, actually, other than the Sharks, which was really surprising. I might have picked them last if you asked me before these series started. I don't know. I saw some of the Nashville-Detroit. It seemed like a Detroit team that's a little bit of a shadow of its former self. That's sort of, I didn't see any of that just obvious skill domination that we've seen with some of those really skilled players like the Datsyuk and Zetterberg and these guys. I know Helm got knocked out, but I'm not seeing that skill differential like I'm so used to seeing with the Red Wings against Nashville. They've got some good guys. Nashville's playing well. And and I thought that Weber thing was pretty egregious too. I'm surprised he didn't get suspended.
Yeah, he gets fined, you know, $2.50 or whatever that was.
He's making $800 trillion per year, and they're going to fine him a buck and a half.
It's pretty embarrassing.
Yeah.
The thing I found interesting about the Phoenix Chicago game is Phoenix twice gave up a lead in the last 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, in the last 15 seconds, I think they gave up the lead twice, and they managed to still win one of those games. Because of that, I think I like Chicago more going forward. Mm. I think mentally that can wear on you. You know you've got the lead and then you're sort of half expecting yourself to give it up.
Right.
You saw Mike Smith's reaction last night after the goal scored at the end of the game where he just threw a hissy fit in the crease.
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't believe that it happened in back-to-back games. So,
That being said, he totally dove on that hit.
Yeah.
He completely dove.
So are we looking to give out Best Actor awards at the end of the playoffs?
Because that's pretty good.
Kessler,
Smith.
Would be nominated.
Yeah.
And then we can give out the Biggest Douche award.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that really sort of annoys me that I'm surprised refs don't take notice on is goalies are the biggest divers in the NFL, in the NHL, and I've never, ever once seen a goalie take a diving penalty, ever. And I've watched a lot of hockey over the last 15 years.
Yeah, you don't see that.
I've never seen it, and it's so obvious. I mean, the Havlat penalty, totally obvious. The Havlat penalty in game one where he tripped him, that was a dumb penalty by Havlat. They call it 100% of the time. That being said, Halak is going to make it look like he was shot. I mean, Halak obviously embellished it. not enough to get a diving penalty, but I mean, it's just, that's par for the course in terms of goalies. And the Mike Smith thing, you know, he got rocked a little bit. I'm not sure how bad. Let's say he got rocked a little bit, but he just had to sit there on the ground just to make sure that someone got the call. Who, I can't remember who it was that hit him, but he had to make sure, he got to stay down for like...
It was Andrew Shaw.
Yeah, Andrew Shaw. He got to stay down for like 3 minutes to make sure Shaw gets the major. Mm-hmm. And then he's sort of like, oh, then he stands up and like puffs his chest out and like says, I guess I'll soldier on, and puts the thing back. It puts his helmet back on. I'm like, this is so obvious. Like everybody knows this is what's going to happen. Like there's no way you're leaving. I mean, the reason why the Halak thing was, you know, he was really hurt is because he got hit by his own guy.
Yeah.
If he got hit by Martin Havlat instead, Halak would have been down for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
He would
have been the stretcher.
He would have been done the Mike Ribeiro, like, you know, the little baby act on the ice. You know?
I wish the listeners could see the visual of that baby act.
It was good. I was like a baby Tyrannosaurus.
Dude, we're in the official countdown right now. I'm like 13 days away from being a dad.
Dude, nice.
This is crazy town.
You're going to name her BJ Crombie. BJ Crombie Santana.
That is, I can't believe you're even suggesting that as a name. That's got to be the worst suggestion for a little girl name.
You're right.
Ever.
It is.
Ever.
It is.
And you should be ashamed
That's
of yourself.
That's why I picked it, though.
That's terrible.
Well, there is humor on this podcast.
No, very rarely. Very rarely. Well, hopefully we'll be back talking to you about the Sharks having a series lead after games 3 or 4 or 5 or whenever it is we're able to podcast again. But keys to getting out in front here, dude.
Those top two players, the Marlowe and Couture, have to make an impact in game 3, or else the Sharks are likely going to lose it just like they lost game 2.
Yeah, I agree. And we're both advocating for Brad Winchester to return to the lineup. Woo-hoo! Over Dominic Moore, you know, assuming that he won't be playing. And we'll see what happens, dude. Go Sharks.
Go Sharks.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.